This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Amid the athletic performances, the medal presentations, the protests, and the celebrations down in Rio the next couple of weeks, there is also this. It is flat-out expensive to host the Olympic Games. Rio's deficit is being estimated in the billions of dollars. Hasn't always been that way, though. David Goldblatt is the author of The Games, A Global History of the Olympics. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
You know, a lot of people point to the L.A. Games of 1984 as the games that discovered the Olympics could turn a profit and it could be a money-making enterprise. I want to take you back, though, to 1936 and Berlin, which you say sort of changed the economics of the Olympic Games forever.
Well, it changes it because for the first time, you've got a national government prepared to open the coffers. And while, you know, it's difficult to calculate, I reckon in today's terms, Berlin costs something in the region of $10 billion. So that changes the scale of the games, the aspiration of the games, sort of lays down a gauntlet to everybody else in the future. So that's state funding. That's absolutely not the private sector model of LA 84.
Talk about that LA model, because the organizers there were actually barred legally from using public funds, and so they had to find other ways to do it.
Yeah, I mean, Peter Ueberroth is the key figure here. He turned out, tried for the 56 water polo team for the Games for the States, but ended up founding the second biggest travel agency in the US. And there are three elements to making it work in LA. First of all, you don't build anything. You use what you've got. And you make the most of it. Second, you actually get a deal with the TV people that represents the real value of the games. And then there was sponsorship. And again, there'd been a lot of sponsorship at the Olympics by then. Lake Placid in 1980 had like 325 sponsors. But as Ueberroth said, what did you end up with? You know, a lifetime supply of chapsticks and yogurt. You know, what you needed was money. The problem is, no one has been able to repeat the feat.
Well, right. How did we get from there to today, when I think there are, what, two countries bidding for the 2024 games and there was some arm twisting involved to get them to bid?
Well, for the 2022, there were just two for the Winter Games, and we were down to, you know, Almaty in Kazakhstan and Beijing, which is like 180 kilometers from the nearest mountains. I mean, all sorts of things have changed. And the first thing that's changed is these days, the money that comes in from television and sponsorship doesn't go to the host. They're barely getting a penny of that. That's being recycled through the International Olympic Movement to the sports federations and the Olympic committees and so on. The host don't get a thing.
Were you surprised then when the residents of the city of Boston came down firmly on the, we want nothing to do with this bid for the 2024 Summer Games?
I was only surprised in the sense that finally common sense seems to be reigning in this world. And I thought, you know, good on Boston, because the arguments at the moment under the current model of Olympic funding and development just don't add up.
Let me get you back as we close then to this idea of Berlin in 1936 and why people want the games. It is a vessel. It is a means by which national power can be projected, even with all its flaws.
It is, and it is also a place where national power and where dominant stereotypes can be challenged. I mean, of course, Jesse Owens is the story we all know from 1936, where, you know, on the field of play, you know, racism and fascism could be, you know, challenged. And my favorite of all, the Indian hockey team who appeared, you know, under the flag of the British Empire, but in secret would take out the Indian flag of Congress before they went out on the pitch. Right. And in the final, they beat the Germans, the Nazis, 8-1. And it's those moments of kind of transcendence and challenge to the order that show what, you know, what kind of humanity we really are. That's the last thing keeping, you know, keeping the eyes on the screen and giving me hope.
David Goldblatt, his book is called The Games, A Global History of the Olympics. Mr. Goldblatt, thanks very much for your time, sir.
Thank you so much.